Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to how EPA must finish the job on protecting the RFS. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone keypad. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Thank you. Sir, the floor is yours.
All right. Well, thank you, Charlotte, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. We hope you're staying safe and well, and we know there's been no shortage of news to cover recently, and we know how busy you are, so we really do appreciate you spending some time with us this morning to discuss what's happening in the world of ethanol. And I wanted to start out by reminding folks that tomorrow, September 24th, is actually the eight-month anniversary of the Tenth Circuit Court ruling in our case challenging EPA's issuance of certain small refinery exemptions. And in the wake of last week's big news around the denial of 54 refinery exemption petitions, we wanted to get together, and really our goal here today is to really just take stock of where things stand with EPA and the Tenth Circuit Court decision, and with other commitments that have been made by EPA and the administration regarding the RFS. So joining me on the call today, we have leaders from the other three groups that joined RFA in challenging EPA and the Tenth Circuit, and that's the National Corn Growers Association, the National Farmers Union, and the American Coalition for Ethanol. So these are the four groups that aggressively took on EPA's abuse of the small refinery exemption program, and we believe secured one of the most important court decisions in the history of the RFS. And, you know, not everyone shared in our initial vision or agreed with our approach, but our four groups stood shoulder to shoulder to stand up to EPA and the refiners. Also on the phone with us is our outside counsel, Matt Morrison with Pillsbury Winthrop Shaw Pittman. That's a mouthful. And Matt led the effort in the Tenth Circuit, and he's going to provide a bit of a refresher on the case and its current status and really implications of that decision. So by now, I'm sure you all know that last week EPA denied 54 small refinery exemption petitions, and the agency committed to rejecting at least 14 more pending petitions. And these were the so-called retroactive gap year petitions that had been filed by small refiners who were really attempting to circumvent the Tenth Circuit decision by going back in time and absurdly claiming that they had a hardship years ago and should have had an exemption. And so, you know, they were asking EPA to now grant them an exemption from their compliance obligations as far back as 2011. And really the whole purpose of them trying to secure these gap year exemptions was so that they would be able to claim that they now meet the conditions of the Tenth Circuit decision and should remain eligible for more waivers going forward. Fortunately, the Trump administration recognized the irrationality of those petitions and rejected them outright. And really, I want to underscore just how big of a deal that really is. I mean, the 68 petitions that are being denied represent roughly 2.8 billion gallons of renewable fuel blending requirements from past years, and rejecting those petitions means that those blending requirements will be preserved. I'm sure you saw our statements on the denial of those gap year exemptions last week, so I won't rehash those here, other than to say obviously it was great news and a big step forward on the path to restoring integrity to the renewable fuel standard. But we're really here today to remind EPA and remind the administration that there is a lot of work that remains to be done, and there are more commitments that remain unfulfilled, and it's time for the administration to finish the job. It was 1 year ago, on September 12, 2019, that President Trump convened a meeting at the White House to develop a plan for reviving the RFS and restoring market certainty for farmers and biofuel producers. And in that meeting, he had six Republican senators from Iowa, Nebraska, and South Dakota. You had Vice President Pence, Larry Kudlow, Mick Mulvaney, Secretary Perdue was on the phone, EPA Administrator Wheeler was on the phone, and by all accounts, everyone left that meeting with the understanding that an agreement had been reached to put the RFS back on track and to stabilize biofuel and agricultural markets. That agreement from that September 12th meeting was later memorialized just a few weeks later on October 4th in an announcement from EPA and USDA. And I would encourage you all to go back and take a look at that October 4th memo. It is still available on EPA's website. And it lays out exactly what was, what was committed to and established a 5-point plan for moving forward. And unfortunately, 1 year later, very little progress has been made toward the implementation of that 5-point plan. In fact, only one of the 5 promised actions from that October 4th announcement has been accomplished to date, and that would be USDA's HBIP infrastructure grant program. The other 4 actions that were promised have not yet been undertaken. So while the gap year petition denials last year were a good start, here's what the administration needs to do to finish the job. Number one, they need to ensure that all of the president's commitments from last September's 5-point plan are upheld. Number two, as I said, EPA has already rejected 54 gap year petitions, but there are still 17 gap year petitions that haven't come back from DOE yet, and EPA needs to reject those the second they come through the front door. Number three, EPA should immediately adopt the 10th Circuit decision nationwide and apply it to all 33 pending exemption requests for 2019 and 2020. Fourth, EPA should propose the 2021 RVO rule that we're still waiting on, and typically we see the RVO proposal around July 4th. Here it is, the end of September. We still haven't seen that. So EPA needs to get that rule proposed. It needs to include the statutory volumes for conventional renewable fuels, and it needs to include increased requirements for cellulosic and advanced biofuels. It also needs to be written in a way and implemented in a way that is consistent with the 10th Circuit Court decision. EPA should also include in the 2021 RVO the required 500 million gallon remanded volume that was ordered by the D.C. Circuit Court in a 2017 decision in the Americans for Clean Energy case, and many of our groups were involved in that litigation as well. And then finally, EPA should ensure that the small refiner exemption program is transparent, which is something that has been utterly lacking from the process, and that basic information is provided to the public around these decisions. So again, we're very pleased with last week's news about the gap year petition denials, but as you just heard, we have a lot of work to do. So I'm going to, at this point, turn it over to Matt Morrison with Pillsbury. He'll be followed by Kevin Ross, who will be followed by Brian Jennings, and then we'll finish with Ann Steckel from the National Farmers Union, and then we will open it up to your questions. So Matt, go ahead.
Great, Chad. Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. I'm going to I'm going to hit 3 points about the 10th Circuit decision. First, I'm going to give a little bit of background or reminder background on why we filed the suit in the first place and why we filed it in the 10th Circuit. Secondly, I'm going to just do a recap of the court decision and its key holding. And then I'm going to wrap up with kind of a future-looking piece on where we are today, the appeals process, rehearing Supreme Court cert petitions, and whether or not, as Jeff said a moment ago, whether or not that decision is made nationally applicable. So let me start with the first one, why we filed the suit, where we filed it, when we did. The 10th Circuit litigation was something we began in May of 2018 when RFA, along with the National Corn Growers Association, National Farmers Union, and the American Coalition for Ethanol, filed a petition against EPA challenging EPA's issuance of the small refinery exemptions against 3 refineries. And those 3 were the Holly Frontier Woods Cross Refinery in Utah, the Holly Frontier Cheyenne Refinery in Wyoming and the Wynnewood Refinery in Oklahoma. Now, as Jeff just said a moment ago, the small refinery program for years has been kind of an opaque program run by the agency, very little transparency. So it made our job fairly difficult to find out about these exemptions when they were given and the extent to which they were granted by EPA. So we had to do a fair amount of detective work that went into developing the petition, because EPA then, and still today, refused to share even the most basic information about the refineries that were seeking to be excused from compliance with the Clean Air Act RFS program. So we had to get creative. We scoured 10K reports, corporate press statements, news articles, anything we could to see which refineries had been granted exemptions. We ultimately found refineries in other circuits around the country, but we were drawn to the 10th Circuit for a few reasons. But a big one was there was an earlier decision in that court regarding small refinery exemptions. And that case was the 2017 Sinclair Oil decision. And it was in that case that the 10th Circuit announced that EPA's small refinery exemption decisions were nothing more than administrative adjudications. And because of that, they're not entitled to the typical agency deference. Now, what that means is, in layman's terms, that the agency's decisions had to stand on their own and prove to be persuasive on their own merit. So with that kind of neutral ground, if you will, we felt pretty comfortable that EPA decisions couldn't meet that standard of being persuasive on their own merit. So we filed there. Now let me talk to you a little bit about the court decision itself. The decision came out, as Jeff said, 8 months ago tomorrow, January 24th, 2020. It followed oral argument we had in Denver last fall. The decision came out from a unanimous three-judge panel, Judges Briscoe, Kelly, and Lucero, and they had three basic or key holdings, what are sometimes referred to as the pillars of the 10th Circuit decision. First, the court said that the Clean Air Act allows EPA to only extend existing exemptions, and it does not allow EPA to create new exemptions after the refineries have already demonstrated they could achieve compliance. And in this case, since none of the three small refineries here consistently received an exemption in the years preceding its petition, the EPA exceeded its statutory authority in granting those petitions. In other words, there was nothing for the agency to extend because the exemptions had lapsed. Secondly, the court found that the Clean Air Act required that any disproportionate hardship justifying an exemption had to be the result of compliance with the RFS program itself. It could be just a hard time in the industry, the result of some tough management decisions or any other circumstances outside of the RFS. So on that point, the court concluded that EPA exceeded its authority once again in a second way by granting exemptions for reasons that were just unrelated to RFS compliance. And then third and finally, the court found that EPA abused its discretion by failing to address the extent to which the three refineries were able to recoup their compliance costs by charging higher prices for the fuels they sold, which was one of the refineries raising in its. And on that point, EPA over the years has consistently maintained that all refineries, big and small, can and do recover their RIN compliance costs in the price of the fuel that they sell. So, if RIN costs are simply a pass-through to the end consumer, the court basically concluded what we are agreed with us, that it makes no sense that compliance would cause a hardship, much less a disproportionate hardship to other refineries. So those were the three basic holdings, the basic of what we call the pillars of the decision. And then I'm just going to talk to you a little bit about where we go from here. There were two steps in the post-decision process. The first was the ability of the companies to seek a rehearing with the same court. EPA and the Justice Department decided to not ask for a rehearing of the decision, but the refiners did seek a rehearing. That request was promptly denied. In fact, there is no single judge in the panel of the 10th Circuit that was polled to even suggest that revisiting the decision might be appropriate. And the second post-decision action was seeking review by the Supreme Court. Now, once again, the government has declined to do so. So it was only the refiners, the small refineries, or the refiners that filed a cert petition with the Supreme Court. Our response is going to be due within 30 days after that cert petition. A cert petition, again, is just shorthand for petition for certiorari, the vehicle that you use to get before the Supreme Court. That is due within 30 days after the cert petition is docketed. It has not, to our knowledge, been docketed yet, so we haven't started that clock. Importantly, what's taken up to the Supreme Court is only one of the three pillars. The refineries just appealed the extension issue, the notion that you can extend a small refinery exemption that had already lapsed. And in that petition, basically the refiners make the argument that Congress, they feel, intended small refinery exemptions to be what they call a safety valve that should be available, in their view, any time throughout the RFS program. Well, we disagree, and the 10th Circuit disagreed, and found that the small refinery exemptions were temporary in nature and just meant to be an initial bridge to compliance for all refineries. So in terms of the timeline for Supreme Court review, it's really hard to say. There is no set timeline, and that can range from weeks to months. The standard of review, what the Supreme Court will look at, is set forth in its own rules. There's actually, the Supreme Court has its own procedural rules, and Rule 10 says that a petition for writ of certiorari will be granted only for compelling reasons. And that comes down, in our case, to about two or three points. One, it has to be shown to conflict with another decision of another court of appeals. Well, we really don't have that here. Second, it has to be shown that it departed a great deal from accepted and usual course of judicial proceedings. And again, there's no sense that the 10th Circuit went off the rails in its decision. And then thirdly, the Supreme Court might review it if the decision reflected an important question of federal law that has not been or should be settled by the Supreme Court. We don't think any of those tests are met. There was no conflicting decision, and the 10th Circuit's decision, even though it affects all refineries in the 10th Circuit, it was really evaluating only three of the hundreds of small refinery exemptions that EPA has issued over the years. Statistically, there's about a 1% chance that the petition will be granted. So each year, the court receives about 9,000 to 10,000 petitions, and it grants about 80 to 100 for plenary review. So it's not that likely. And lastly, I just want to say one thing about Jeff's comments about whether this decision should apply nationally. We do think that there are at least a few reasons why it should. Number one, through this decision, even though it's just limited to the 10th Circuit, a large percent of the small refinery capacity across the country would be affected. The decision is now the law in the 10th Circuit, and the capacity of small refineries in the 10th Circuit comprises about 31% of the small refinery capacity in the United States. So if EPA were to limit the decision to just the 10th Circuit, you have an uneven playing field, which is contrary to EPA's policies. Secondly, there's past precedent for the agency adopting circuit court decisions. It did so in the Sinclair decision and the Ergon decision. So there's precedent for applying it nationally anyway. Thirdly, limiting the decision would also require, will create a great amount of regulatory complexity. It would require EPA to keep two sets of books and also require the refineries to do the same, which would create considerable complexity in being in the 10th Circuit and being outside of the 10th Circuit. Fourth, we think the odds would be tough if this were litigated fully in other circuits. We have three pillars, and even if one of the three pillars were challenged successfully, we think the likelihood of all three falling is very low. And lastly, I guess I would just say that applying the 10th Circuit decision nationally is an opportunity for EPA to calm the waters of the RFS program and bring back some market stability. The sudden and dramatic expansion of small refinery exemptions has really upended the program over the last few years. And applying the 10th Circuit decision nationally would go a long way in restoring order to the market and obviate the need for all the various legal proceedings still underway on these exemptions. So that's I think, enough context and background. I'll turn it over. Kevin, if you want to jump into this point, that would be great.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate everybody being on the call here this morning. And just a brief introduction, I'm Kevin Ross, president of the National Corn Growers Association, farmer from southwest Iowa. Some comments on behalf of NCGA. The denial of these gap year waiver petitions, it's clearly positive, but from our perspective, it was really the only obvious answer to what we would consider a new low by the oil industry to undermine the RFS and rewrite history with these gap year petitions. They were really just completely off base in general. And so I think the bigger concern for farmers is the real uncertainty that the waivers for these 19 and 20 compliance years that are still under consideration. We've got the positive decision from the 10th Circuit Court that can help resolve these waivers. And as Jeff mentioned, that when they finally get out of DOE, they should be dismissed immediately after in the same fashion. So farmers, they're not going to have that certainty that they need going into harvest here, and that's. The administration won't be able to live up to their promises to keep the RFS whole until this waiver issue is fully resolved. So something that we really need to get done. Right now, we've got these suppressed markets in our ethanol plants. In general, continue to be idle and have idle capacity. So addressing these pending waivers and really bringing some transparency to this process would go a long way to inject some confidence into the rural ag economy, and again, especially going into harvest this year. So we think it's a really simple solution here, and the EPA needs to uphold the law. They need to adhere to the 10th Circuit decision and really follow through on the president's commitment to farmers and to the RFS, which I've said many times before. I think it's a policy, the renewable fuel standard, that will go down in history as one of the best pieces of legislation ever to pass in Congress. We're really fortunate to have some great champions in Congress for the RFS and for biofuels in general. And I want to give a shout out to my own Senator Ernst here in Iowa. She, as well as other big biofuel supporters, have the presidency here on this issue, especially her. And we greatly appreciate all that they've all done to elevate this issue and stand up for the farmers that they represent across the nation. These issues, including all the small refinery exemptions, have been high on farmers' lists of priority issues to have resolved. But it's all about the underlying policy of the renewable fuel standard and making sure that is upheld is such a quality piece of legislation that supports biofuels and the blending of them. So, just lastly, NCGA is, we're ready to do all we can in our power to work with the administration to uphold the RFS, and to continue to remove barriers to higher ethanol blends. We look to those to be, continue the future of demand for corn grind and absolutely the positive aspects of biofuels. We continue to discover more, but the clean air quality and the environmental benefits of them are something that can't be understated at all. So we recognize those, and again, we stand ready to help the administration uphold the RFS and work with the folks in this industry to move biofuels into the future. So thank you very much, and I'll stay on here for questions as well. I'll turn it over to Mr. Jennings. Brian, take it away.
Thanks a lot, Kevin. It's my pleasure to join RFA and the Corn Growers and Farmers Union to discuss this important issue. I'm Brian Jennings, CEO of the American Coalition for Ethanol, by the way. I would say the unfortunate reality is that the Environmental Protection Agency has so badly mismanaged the RFS over the last 3.5 years. When you think about it, so many ethanol promises to do right by this industry have collected dust, that I think too many folks misinterpreted last week's decision to reject some of these gap year waivers as a significant turning point. It was not. It was a step in the right direction, but these gap year waivers should never have been given credibility. They were really nothing more than an outrageous attempt by refiners, really a last gasp attempt by refiners, hoping to avoid the consequences of our victory in the 10th Circuit, which Jeff and Matt have discussed. So, yes, we're glad 54 of the gap year waivers were rejected, but frankly, they should have been rejected months ago. And last week's action falls considerably short, I would say, of undoing the damage, really, that EPA has done to our industry by effectively letting, refiners cheat on the RFS over the last few years. Sanity has not yet been restored to how EPA handles the RFS, and the list of broken promises, the list of abuses is long, and I think paramount among those is that EPA has yet to apply this 10th Circuit decision nationally. EPA needs to quit stalling. It needs to formally adopt that 10th court decision now. And it needs to ensure that decision applies to all of the pending small refinery exemptions. Another item on that list that Jeff referred to, but I want to reinforce this, is the 2021 renewable volume obligation. Typically, at this time of year, we all would have provided our public comment to EPA on their proposed volumes. EPA and OMB would be in the process of getting ready to formally publish the final RVOs for next year. But here we are, having not seen the proposal, given no opportunity to comment, and not knowing what the future is going to look like. And I think that's simply unacceptable uncertainty about next year. And I guess finally, speaking of unacceptable, Jeff mentioned this as well, but I want to reinforce it. It's been 3 years since the D.C. Circuit Court remanded EPA to restore 500 million gallons to the 2016 RFS compliance year due to the illegal blend wall waiver that we and others litigated, and it appears no one has lifted a finger at EPA to deal with that. So we're here to say the job is far from finished. In many ways, EPA has taken a program that Congress designed to increase renewable fuel use, and they've turned the RFS into something that instead limits our market. So we're calling on the administration to really get the RFS back on track. We're still calling on the administration to get the RFS back on track. And I would say starting with nationwide adoption of the 10th Circuit decision. I'll turn it over to Ann.
Thanks, Brian, and good morning, everyone. I'm Ann Steckel, Senior Advisor to the National Farmers Union. Appreciate being on this call with you all to discuss the issue of renewable fuels, which is really of great importance to NFU. I just want to echo and associate myself with all the comments that the previous speakers made. This administration's continued disregard for the renewable fuel standard and the renewable fuel industry has been detrimental not only to renewable fuels producers, but to farmers. The SRE issue has seen us lose well over 4 billion gallons of renewable fuels over the years, which is a huge number and really unacceptable. As discussed by others, we were optimistic with the Tenth Circuit's decision. Unfortunately, it's not been applied on a nationwide basis. Although we got word that the gap year or the past pending SREs were denied, 54 of those were denied, we really feel like there is a lot of work left to do on this issue. We still have all of the SREs that are hanging out there for the waivers for 2019 and 2020. And we really feel that EPA needs to follow the letter of the law of the RFS and keep the RFS whole. And by these granting of these waivers, they're not doing that. Like many industries, ethanol was affected by COVID and demand was down. And so demand was down for corn as well. Coupled with trade policies, this has been a really hard year for farmers. So we're calling on the Trump administration to keep their pledge to support farmers and uphold the RFS and to really apply this 10th Circuit decision nationwide. And Jeff, with that, I'll hand it back over to you.
All right. Thanks so much, Ann, and thanks to all of our speakers. And operator, at this time, we'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you. As a reminder, to ask a question, just press star 1 on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, just press the pound key. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question. Your first question comes from the line of Tara Hart.
Thank you all for taking my question. I have a question regarding COVID aid, actually, for Kevin, Brian, and or Jeff, and I know Jeff and I have talked about this in the last week. I was curious, what's the status of COVID-19 relief for the biofuels industry? And as a follow-up, what happens to the biofuels industry if they get no assistance? Thank you for answering my questions.
Well, this is Jeff, and I can start, and I'm sure Brian, Kevin, and others may have comments to offer as well. But Kara, the short answer is we continue to push very hard for inclusion of direct, specific emergency relief for ethanol producers in any future COVID-19 relief packages. Unfortunately, progress on a comprehensive fourth COVID package has really fizzled out. In Congress, we obviously saw their attention shift to getting a CR done this week. There's also obviously the issue of the Supreme Court and the passing of Justice Ginsburg that is going to be front and center for Congress these next few weeks. And then, of course, we've got the election right around the corner. So we're running out of days on the calendar. I think to get a comprehensive fourth relief package done. However, if it comes together and things start moving, we feel very confident about the prospects of including relief for biofuels. It was included in the HEROES Act that passed months ago now, thanks to the hard work of Congressman Peterson and others. We also saw in the Senate legislation introduced by Senators Grassley and Klobuchar that would have provided specific direct relief to biofuels as well. So there is support. There's support on both sides of the aisle in both chambers to get this done. It's just a matter of timing and whether the stars can align to make it happen or not. you know, with regard to your other question, yes, the ethanol industry still needs needs a hand. The industry is still struggling to recover from the impacts of COVID-19 on our markets. We have seen some recovery, but we're still, you know, 15% or so below year-ago production levels. We still have a number of facilities that are idled. We still have workers that are on furlough or have been laid off. So, you know, yes, conditions have improved in the industry, certainly better off today than we were in April and March. But we haven't climbed out of the hole that COVID put us in and have a ways to go and could certainly use a lifeline to help get us out of that hole. So I guess those would be my comments. And like I said, I'm sure Brian or Kevin or Ann may have more to add.
This is
Kevin,
Brian.
Go ahead, Kevin. I was just going to say that a lot of these plants, you know, have chewed through just tons of working capital over this period. And that's the you know, one of the biggest issues. It was, you know, COVID in general has caused disruptions in many, many, many industries. But the, you know, the markets for farmers with the plants being shut down was really, you know, exacerbated the problem in rural America. But these plants need help. You know, we've asked for assistance and certainly asked to, you know, in any way to help these plants if we can, because we need these plants open and grinding corn. So their financial ability to stay healthy is paramount to that, and making sure that, that these plants are still open. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. You know, just to reinforce the point Kevin made about the working capital being eroded at these facilities, there are some ethanol plants in the country that lost more money over the course of March and April of this year than they made in 2018, than they made in 2019. And so the financial hit has been devastating. Jeff talked about the fact that thankfully we have bipartisan, bicameral support in Congress for, you know, some sort of direct relief for biofuel producers, including biodiesel producers, not just ethanol producers. But regrettably, Congress hasn't, you know, figured out a way to get together on a fourth package. And so if something is not done, I think it's possible that we could see, you know, some of these plants close, which would be incredibly unfortunate for, you know, corn markets and jobs in rural communities. I think it's probable, if nothing is adopted, I think it's probable we see some consolidation in the ethanol industry where some of the very biggest players in ethanol become even bigger. And personally, I'm not excited about that possibility. So, yeah, we need Congress to step up to the plate, and I just think it's outrageous that we have the administration that seems like they've bent over backwards to try and accommodate the financial interests of the oil sector, and not a lot has been done with ethanol. And by that I mean, look, the president personally intervened to cajole really OPEC to reduce output of oil earlier this year to support domestic oil prices. We've seen him direct DOE to buy surplus oil, or buy oil, I should say, for the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. We've seen changes to the Federal Reserve lending rules for emergency loans to oil and gas producers. We need that sort of sense of urgency about rural America and biofuel producers as well.
And this is Jeff, and I would just add one more thing quickly on this point, and that is that we believe USDA, and I'm speaking for RFA here, we believe USDA has the authority already to use some of its existing resources through the Commodity Credit Corporation to provide assistance to biofuel producers. So it's our strong belief that we shouldn't need an act of Congress to direct USDA to help the ethanol industry. There are numerous cases in the past, numerous instances where CCC resources have been used to help the renewable fuels industry, and even downstream from the ethanol plant. I mean, the CCC is the vehicle that is used to provide funding for infrastructure for retail gas stations. So there is precedent of those resources and vehicles being used to help processors downstream from the farmer, and we believe USDA should strongly consider that.
And this is Ann. Just one other thing to tag on, Kara. Certainly agree with all the comments that Jeff and others made, and we're very supportive of additional relief in any stimulus package. We were happy to see the language that was included in the CR that would not allow farm payments to go to refiners or oil companies. It seems a little strange that we'd actually have to put that in actual language, and that wouldn't just be something that people would understand wouldn't be done. But we were glad that those barriers were put up as some extra protection.
Your next question comes from Jerry Hedstrom.
Good morning. This is a question, first of all, for Kevin, but I'd be happy if others would chime in. Do you think the administration needs to take more actions on ethanol if they want people to vote for Trump and also for Joni Ernst in particular? And secondly, what do you make of Senator Grassley saying a few weeks ago that the statements by the Iowa Renewable Fuels Association were hurting both Trump and Ernst?
Well, first of all, I would say that I don't know that I have any comments on the Senator Grassley statements there. That's certainly his business and his perspective as to what was going on, and I would hate to put words in his mouth. So I will say that right now, obviously there are a lot of tough races in the state of Iowa, and in general, right now the administration, any of these actions that they could take on biofuels, I think is very supportive for the folks that are our champions there in D.C. and would certainly give some more clarity to the support that they so often talk about with farmers and the care that the president has in the interest of farmers. And so I think if we can see continued movement on some of these issues within the next month, including applying this 10th Circuit decision, these other gap year petitions that are remaining, as well as other issues. But as Brian said, and said it really well, that this issue in general, this was a reach by the oil industry. And so for them to come out and certainly it absolutely was good statements by the president to come out and say get rid of these things and tell the EPA to move on. We just need this thing done. We need this done. We need some of these other points that Jeff talked about that were in previous plans for biofuels to really get moved on. And any of these actions would really help. I think just the health of the industry, the biofuels industry in the state of Iowa in particular, if you can garner that support and have this industry healthy and clicking on all cylinders, that certainly helps the legislators, especially Senator Ernst, who's been an absolute champion for us out there. So it'll be an interesting election, but we need champions like her for sure.
Can you tell me, does either the National Corn Growers Association or the Iowa Corn Growers endorse candidates? Have they endorsed Ernst?
So we don't exactly do an endorsement, but we certainly have different ways that we, I gave her an award for all her work that she's done on behalf of corn growers here, the President's Award, as well as, we do things with our PAC endorsements. And so both of them, both national and state PACs, have absolutely been supportive of Senator Ernst because of her efforts, as well as others. But you can look at some recent state
this is Jeff. I'll jump in here as well. And I think the RFS and biofuel issues are absolutely important to voters in certain states, and many of those would be characterized as swing states or toss up states today. Iowa, obviously, Minnesota, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin. You know, is ethanol and the RFS the top issue on the minds of voters in those states? No, probably not. They've got a lot of other things they're thinking about. But can it be a difference maker at the margin and a wedge issue? It absolutely can. And so I think these decisions do matter. They do have implications. Voters are paying attention. And, you know, voters want to see that commitments that were made are being upheld and honored and respected. And, you know, it'll be something they're thinking about when they go to the polls here in another month and a half. So, you know, I guess that would be my perspective on your question.
No, I think that's really well stated, Jeff.
If I could ask one follow-up. When I saw the Brownfield report that Secretary Perdue said there would be no money coming from the CCC for the oil companies, it certainly sounded to me like the White House had proposed it and that, you know, it might be possible to get help from some other division of the government. The last Reuters report I saw sounded like it won't come from the CCC, but it's still out there. What would you think if the administration finds some way to help the oil companies through some other division of the government?
Well, Jerry, I think as Brian eloquently pointed out, this administration has already done a lot for the oil industry. You know, we were shocked by reports that the refiners were, you know, pursuing $300 million in CCC funding that is should be reserved for agriculture. But we know how creative the refiners are, and they're going to look for any opportunity to, you know, to pick the pocket of the American farmer. They've been trying to do that for decades. That's why, as Ann stated, we were happy to see included in the CR last night a prohibition on using any USDA funding to pay off refiners. And that should really clear up any lingering confusion that the oil industry might have had about the actual purpose and intent of the CCC. And it's ridiculous that's something that Congress even had to think about putting into the CR. But again, I think it just speaks to the creativity of the oil industry and their ability to find any little loophole and jam their foot through it.
But the stories I've seen say that this isn't what the oil industry wants, that this must apparently have come from within the administration, because the oil industry is saying, we don't want this, we want reform of the RFS.
Well, there's probably another side of that story as well, Jerry.
Okay.
Regardless, it's an absurd notion to have funds from, you know, from a USDA or other, you know, those type of funds go to be proposed to go to any refiners. So, I don't think that's something that will happen. And certainly, as Jeff stated very eloquently, that sounds like that fix got fixed last night anyway.
Jerry, this is Brian. Just real briefly, I think the fact that the administration continues to think they have to figure out ways to counterbalance any positive ethanol decision with some sort of gift for refiners, it goes to the root of the problem that's not what the RFS is about. That's not what the law calls for. The law that Congress enacted is crystal clear. Refiners need to change their behavior and either blend biofuels into the petroleum products they make or purchase RIN credits from other refiners who choose to do that to comply with the law. And instead of adhering to the law, what we see is the administration trying to figure out ways to, okay, if we do something on one hand for ethanol, what can we do to counter that to keep the refiners happy on the oil side, when all we really need them to do is follow the law?
Yeah, and I just to add further to that, I think characterizing the rejection of these gap year petitions as a gift to the ethanol industry is inappropriate. It is not a big give or a gift to the industry. As Brian pointed out earlier, it's simply doing something that should have been done or undoing something that never should have happened in the first place. This notion that there's got to be, if you're going to do something for the ethanol industry, you got to do something for refiners, I agree, is just a ridiculous notion, but it's one that we've been battling for 4 years now.
That was Jeff that said that, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Jackie Fatka.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the time today. Jeff, you had kind of gone through some of the things that were agreed upon in that meeting over, nearly a year ago that haven't happened yet. And obviously this is kind of starting to become a political issue. You guys have been pushing for that for a while. Are there specific things that folks are really watching for? I know you guys have all talked about the national acceptance of that 10th court, but are there other things that are important? And also, too, ahead of that announcement last Monday was President Trump's tweet on the E15, and there were some concerns that E15 could not be put into all of those retail pumps. And so I just wondered if you guys could offer some clarification on that, too. His announcement, is that something that actually can be done?
Well, I'll start, and I'm sure this is Jeff, and I'm sure Brian and others may have something to add to this. But yeah, if you go back to the announcement that was made a year ago, October 4th, 2019, by EPA and USDA, they laid out, as I mentioned earlier, five specific actions that they were going to take as a consequence of this meeting and agreement that happened in September last year. Sort of the centerpiece of that five-point plan was ensuring that 15 billion gallons of conventional renewable fuel under the RFS means 15 billion gallons, and that it would not be eroded by small refinery exemptions or other waivers issued by EPA. So we still don't know, unfortunately, if how that's going to shake out. We won't know until well into 2021, whether the 2020 RVO was actually truly enforced or not. So that gives us pause and concern. But also among the list of five things was a commitment that EPA would begin a rulemaking to remove barriers to the sale of E15. And that hasn't happened. They haven't initiated any sort of rulemaking on the E15 pump label like they said they were going to do. They haven't taken any steps to initiate any kind of rulemaking to address the compatibility of the existing infrastructure with E15. Now, we did see President Trump's tweet about that, not this past weekend, but the weekend before. And that's encouraging to see, and we're grateful for that expression of support. But there's a lot of legwork that would have to happen to make that vision a reality. There are, at least two EPA regulations, at least one OSHA regulation, state and local fire codes that would all need to be modified. And to think that could be done in a matter of weeks before the election, I think is just not realistic. So that's another one of those commitments from last year that has not been upheld. There was also one around transparency. As we mentioned earlier, we still have no transparency around the small refinery process. And then finally, the fifth was around trade, and there was a commitment that ethanol would be prioritized in trade negotiations. And unfortunately, we haven't seen much progress there either. We're still frozen out of China, even though we were, ethanol and distillers grains were part of the phase one agreement. And we're going backward in other markets like Brazil, where we've seen them, playing games with their tariff rate quota and 20% tariff in that market. We've got Colombia, Mexico, Peru that are also putting up trade barriers. So, you know, in a nutshell, we haven't seen much progress on those commitments from that meeting a year ago outside of the one action item that USDA was in charge of, the infrastructure program. So hopefully that answers your question, Jackie.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Ewell.
Hi, yeah, just a quick follow-up from Brian and anybody else who wants to chime in. But you mentioned a fear of more, or I guess a concern of more ethanol companies consolidating. Are you seeing that actually happening now?
No, Ben, not necessarily. But recall that the ethanol industry was on shaky financial ground coming into 2020. In large part due to EPA's mishandling of, you know, the small refinery exemptions under the RFS, diminishing our domestic market. And then, you know, the trade wars that have really constrained our ability to market ethanol around the world, which had really been saving our bacon prior to those trade wars. And so, you know, plants had generally been in a pretty strong position prior to that, but some working capital was eroded the last couple years. Kevin, you know, correctly stated that this year, of course, with the devastating market contraction we saw, you saw plants suffer more financially. So I want to be careful and say that I said it's possible we see some of this, but I'm not seeing any of it now, no.
Your next question comes from the line of Abby Smith.
Hi, thanks so much for holding this call this morning, and thanks for taking my question. I wanted to follow up on some of the election-related questions that were asked a little earlier, and wanted to ask you all, Joe Biden put out a statement last week on biofuels and the RFS hitting the Trump administration pretty hard for kind of this flip-flopping and this distrust that they've sown on the RFS that you all have been talking about, as well as talking about his vision for ethanol and biofuels. What was your reaction to that statement, and, you know, how would you envision being able to work with a potential Biden administration on RFS issues? Thanks.
Well, this is Jeff, and we haven't heard much from Ann Steckel from the Farm Bureau, National Farmers Union. So, Ann, you want to field that one first?
Sure, I'd be happy to. We were incredibly pleased to see the statement come out of the Biden campaign about his support for the RFS, all of his thoughts on what has gone on with the small refinery exemptions, and we feel very confident that should there be a Biden administration, we would be able to work with them. Certainly one of the issues that's been very important to Biden has been carbon and climate change issues, and we know that using renewable fuels really is much better for the environment and for emissions issues, and so we think we have a lot of synergies that work really well. We have a really great product. Our farmers are really excited to continue to grow the usage of renewable fuels, and really no matter what administration is in the White House, we're going to continue to work with them. It is really an education campaign and a process that we're going to continue to work with.
We have a follow-up question from the line of Jerry Hagstrom.
I was also going to ask about Biden's statements, and so I just asked, does anybody else want to follow up on what Ann had to say?
I'll chime in here a little bit. I think at NCG, you know, we've got a few concerns about their focus on electric vehicles and that infrastructure. We certainly, you know, are ready and willing to along with, you know, Ann and the crew here and others to make sure that they understand the importance of biofuels and what that means to rural America. This is an issue that obviously we all care very, very much about, but farmers in general you know, have to have these markets for the long term, and and we think we can compete very, very well with the electric vehicle markets on carbon and the future fuels and transportation. So, I think there's work to be done there, obviously, but definitely, you know, some things that we need to emphasize within their campaign as well.
And this is Jeff, and I guess the only thing I would add is we've just been very encouraged to see both campaigns engaging on biofuels issues and taking the time to learn more about our industries and what we do and who we are, and that's been, you know, it's been highly encouraging. We haven't always had that opportunity in the past, and I do think the beautiful thing about biofuels is there's something for everyone, right? I mean, there are benefits to using more renewable fuels that are appealing to people across the political spectrum, and certainly we are, hearing more from the Biden campaign about their understanding of the role biofuels can play in a more accelerated transition to a low carbon transportation sector. So that's good to see. And then on the other side, obviously the Trump campaign has been very good about understanding the rural economic benefits, the benefits to the farm economy of a strong and healthy biofuels industry. So we've been pleased to see both campaigns engaging positively on our issues.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, just press star 1 on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time. Presenters, please continue.
Okay, well, thank you, Charlotte, and thank you all for your great questions today and the good discussion. I would just remind you that if you have any follow-up questions or need to reach any of us, please take a look at the media advisory that went out, and it's got press contacts for all of our organizations on there. And don't hesitate to reach out. We'd be happy to follow up with more detail on any of these issues that we discussed today. So thank you again, and I also want to thank the other speakers on today's call for jumping on the phone, and we'll talk to you all soon. Thank you.